You're listening to Ottawa Morning, 91.5 FM on CBC Radio 1. I'm Anthony Germain. He moved one step closer to deportation last month. A federal judge upheld the security certificate for Mohamed Harkat. Canada's spy agency CSIS says Harkat came to Canada as a sleeper agent for Al-Qaeda and is just too dangerous to be released. Harkat, his family, and supporters say he's an innocent man caught up in a mesh of new anti-terrorist laws that won't let him see the evidence against him. The CBC's Evan Dyer went to meet Mohamed Harkat in jail. Good morning, Evan.
Morning, Anthony.
You met with Mohamed Harkat, obviously a person who's been in the news a lot lately. Mm-hmm. What did he have to tell you about his life in prison?
Well, we were a bit constrained by the fact that we had a prison officer in the room with us and Mohamed Harkat was handcuffed. But he did talk a bit about his daily routine at the jail. Mm-hmm. He told me he shares a cell, but his companions and all the other prisoners in the detention center are constantly being changed because, of course, they're all coming and going on regular charges. So he's really become the old man of the jail now after 2 years and some. He spends most of his days split between his own cell and the day room, watching TV, playing cards, reading newspapers. And when the weather's good, he gets 20 minutes in the yard. He seemed calm and healthy, but a bit rattled, Anthony, by the recent judgment, and he says he didn't expect the judgment to go against him.
My brain is like a shocked. It's like I can't think for a while, like what's going on. It's like scary when I see, like, you know, connect me with the most dangerous group in Algeria, with Al-Qaeda. It's dangerous. I start, like, you know, worried more than before because I was thinking to get out.
Where do you think you'll be a year from now?
Looks like here.
Still in this prison.
That's right, sir.
Evan, what did Harkat say about the details of that ruling against him?
Well, most of what was in there, of course, he'd already seen, and those of us who've been covering the trial were already familiar with it, too, because, of course, Harkat was essentially convicted on secret evidence that was heard in camera, and the judge didn't even get into that evidence in the ruling. So that, of course, is his main complaint. It's Harkat's position that, you know, if he or his lawyers had been shown the evidence against him, he says he would have been able to disprove it.
I don't know how they built their case on. I wish I know that. I'm trying, you know, to know that, because if they really show it, I'm going to defend myself, like what happened. I don't have no idea what they have. I wish I have. And if they want to prove it, just, you know, put it on the table and, you know, let people decide what they have.
Evan, what was his reaction to the allegation that he had actually met with senior people, leaders of Al-Qaeda?
Well, one of the issues, as you mentioned at his hearing, was whether he was an associate of leaders like Abu Zubaydah or Mohammed Sadiq O'Day, who was one of the organizers of the U.S. Embassy attack in Nairobi. They might have claimed to have met Harkat, but we don't know for sure because these hearings are secret. Mm-hmm. But the judge said in her ruling that because of doubts about their personal credibility, she wouldn't give any weight to statements these two made to American interrogators. But of course, there may be testimony from other confidential informants linking Harkat to one or both, or to Ahmed Rassam, the so-called Millennium Bomber, the former resident of Montreal. Those names kept on coming up throughout mm-hmm. this hearing. But anyway, Harkat denies all of it.
Have you ever met any of the people that you're accused of associating with? Let me ask you one by one. Abu Zubaydah.
I never met Abu Zubaydah.
O'Day.
O'Day, I never met O'Day. I don't know who's O'Day is. I just, like, heard it from the last one when the judge threw it out. That's the first time I heard about this somebody, his name O'Day.
Had you heard of Abu Zubaydah before?
From the CNN when after September 11, the United States caught them just following the news like anybody else.
Had you ever met Ahmed Rassam?
Never met him.
Nonetheless, Evan, what's his overall position about Al-Qaeda?
Well, he says he rejects the idea of violence against civilians and that Islam preaches peace and tolerance and that he's not interested in the ideology of the bin Laden movement. But Harkat always has admitted to being involved in an Islamist party, but it was a peaceful Islamist party, the Islamic Salvation Front of Algeria, also known as FIS. And this group won the general election in Algeria in the early 90s, and then the army intervened to stop it from taking power. And it was at that time that a lot of its activists had to leave the country. Harkat says he personally left Algeria shortly before those elections. But, you know, of course, FIS is not known as a violent organization. The Canadian government, on the other hand, accuses him of being a member of a very violent group from Algeria called the Armed Islamic Group, or the GIA. But Harkat says he's never met a member of the GIA or had any dealings with it.
Actually, I left Algeria when I was 21, in 1990. And this group, it started, I believe, 93, 94. I don't know, no idea. now I have 14 years, you know, out of Algeria. If you somebody born yesterday, now it's like 15 years old. The way I see it, just, you know, to find most like dangerous group in Algeria to connect me on, to, you know, scare people in Canada and scare the government. Oh, he's dangerous for public, he's dangerous for this. I don't know, like, how they connect me for this group. No idea.
Now, what Harkat just said about the GIA is pretty accurate, because there are no references to this group prior to 1992.
I'm Anthony Germain, and Evan Dyer recently met with alleged terrorist Mohammed Harkat. Just going to take a moment here to update you on the traffic and the weather. +4 is the temperature right now. We're expecting a high of +13. No accidents to report. Things moving along at the usual rate for this hour in the morning drive. It's 15 minutes before 8. Okay, about what happened after he left Algeria, since you just mentioned it, and he did in the tape you played there. The Canadian government finds a particular interest in his movements after he left Algeria.
That's right.
That's where the suspicion is. What does he have to say about that chapter in his life?
Well, Harkat says that when he had to leave Algeria, he went to Saudi Arabia to study. But when he arrived there, he found out that he couldn't get a student visa from inside the country.
Right.
He had very little cash and he was at a loose end. And he met an Algerian student at Al Madinah University there who suggested that he apply to the World Muslim League for a job. And then they employed him to work in a refugee camp near Peshawar in Pakistan with Afghan refugees. And they paid him a pretty good wage, $450 a month American. CSIS and the judge who ruled on this case both said they found Harkat's story of how he got this job and how he arrived in Peshawar very unlikely. So I asked him about it.
Do you know why they hired you? I mean, a young guy, no experience, you know, you don't speak Pashtun or Urdu. Why would they hire you like that?
Actually, it's like I was like in a bad situation. I don't have no place. I can't to go back to Algeria, and I can't stay in Saudi Arabia, and I can't, like, you know, live in the street. That's the way I see it, like helping the already, like the company helping refugee. What about somebody like lost in the middle of the desert?
They wanted to help you too.
That's right, sir.
So what he says basically is that it's normal that the World Muslim League would take a protective interest in someone like him, a young Muslim activist who was broke and he was fleeing persecution in his home country. Given the climate of the times, the suspension of the Algerian election, which was coming, had caused this outrage throughout the Arab
world.
That's
right, yeah.
You know, especially in Islamic circles, and this is an Islamic organization. But Peshawar is suspicious for Western intelligence services, and there's a reason for that, because for years it was the place where Osama bin Laden and many of the foreigners who fought in Afghanistan had their base of operations,
right.
And they, of course, were the nucleus of what became Al-Qaeda. But when Harkat went there in 1990, the world hadn't heard of bin Laden, of course, and the foreign mujahideen who were there were just seen as these heroes who had just beaten the Soviet Union. And there was very wide support for their cause, not just in the Arab world, of course.
Yeah, they were the
Washington.
Good guys, right?
That's
yeah.
right, they were the good guys then. So being in Peshawar in those years of the early 90s doesn't necessarily imply any sympathy with bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
But the important question is what happened after the Taliban took over in Afghanistan, when bin Laden crossed back into Afghanistan and he set up his base in Kandahar. CSIS and the federal judge who just ruled against Harkat say they believe that Harkat went with Al-Qaeda and he trained in Afghanistan. But Harkat himself maintains that he continued his refugee work in Pakistan, and in fact he says he never set foot in Afghanistan.
I would like to know how she like decided I was in Afghanistan. I would like to know how the informant, like, I believe it just, you know, somebody like deceiving the judge and the CSIS. Maybe so for the money, or maybe just, you know, you want to get citizenship, or like, can I sell some things to get some things. I think somebody like frauding the government about this allegation.
It's the story so disturbing, Evan, because last time we touched on this, we had Sophie Harkat sitting in the same chair you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because of the secrecy around the whole thing, it's hard to know what to make of the whole thing. And I wonder, what's next for this guy?
Well, deportation, maybe. Or it may be that the government has to keep him here because he has legitimate grounds to fear for his life if he's returned to Algeria. And if the government does keep Harkat in Canada, they'll have to either put him on trial, presumably, or come up with some new laws that now don't exist that allow someone to be detained indefinitely without charge. And of course, Harkat says he wants a trial.
I can face it, you know, I can defend myself, or they're going to find me guilty. It's like very simple. You can't like, oh, we have some things, like we can't show it because it's dangerous. It's not, it's illegal, you know, to hold somebody and told him, oh, we have some things on you, you know, even like murder's case, you know, they have all the evidence on the table. And I just would like to, like anybody else, you know, put the worst scenario and open the case.
And what happens if he's deported?
Well, if he's deported, then I guess he'll have no choice. The one who'll face a difficult decision, really, is his Canadian-born wife, Sophie Harkat, who you just mentioned. She's maintained all along that she will go with him. But I asked Harkat how he felt about that.
Actually, I don't want to put my wife on like a dangerous situation. I have to, like, I love my wife, and she's like, you know, the strongest person, number one, you know, she defends me. And the first time I met her, you know, it was like, show her who I am, and she believed me. I see my situation, to put me in, no way I can survive, you send me back. And I don't put my wife in the same like category.
Okay, Evan, well, it's a really difficult case that raises some awful questions about security, safety, and individuals' rights. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll just keep watching to see what happens next.
I guess so.
All right, thanks, Evan.
My pleasure, Anthony.
CBC reporter Evan Dyer, your thoughts on this story? Call our talkback line, 288-6888, 288-6888, or send us an email at ottawamorning@cbc.ca. It's 10 minutes before 8 o'clock.